And we're holding on Kuf Nun Amud Aleph, the ninth line. The Mishnah had told us that you have a difference with a Shechiv Merah, whether he gave away all of his Nechosim or only part of them. If he gave away all of them, then we said, Im Omar Choyzer, if he recovers from his illness, then he gets them all back, then all of the gifts are revoked. Because we assume, as we learned a few days ago, we have an Umdana, we have a very strong reason to assume that he wouldn't have given it all away and left himself penniless. On the other hand, if he gives away only some of them, then im amad eini choizer, then even if he recovers, those gifts are not revoked. And the Mishnah had said, if he left himself karka kol shehu, and so we were discussing what exactly does he have to leave for himself that we would say that it's not a matana b'kuloi, only a matana b'miktas. We had, now even though the Mishnah had said karka kol shehu, Rav Yehuda had told us in the name of Rav, it doesn't dafka have to be, it's not actually kol shehu, it actually means only if he left himself enough karka to get parnasa from, for him to be able to live off the proceeds of it. Then we had Rav Yumi Aba Abba saying that it's not karka necessarily. Metaltalin would have the same rule. Like Gemara had mentioned, Kedei Parnasasa, there's a machlokas we've shown him within that, whether in fact the halacha would be in the end that it needs to be Kedei Parnasasa or not. In any case, the point is that both of them are saying that when the Mishnah says karka, kol shehu, doesn't mean exactly that. It can mean, Rabbi Yosef said, why? I mean, the Mishnah says karka, it means karka. The Mishnah says kol shehu, it should mean kol shehu. So why are they saying that it means inexact? So yesterday we dealt with, that Rabbi Yosef had wondered, how could you say that in the Mishnah says karka, but in fact the din includes metalpulin as well, and Rabbi Yosef had asked from a different case, and we went back and forth between him and Abaya about that. So we're left with that, yes, it is a valid question, why, if the Mishnah is saying karka, why shouldn't we say that it means specifically karka? Okay, so now let's deal with the other part of Rabbi Yosef's objection. So v'chol heicha the toni kol shehu less le shiura. Are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that any time it says kol shehu means there's no shiur for it, means even the smallest amount, and therefore you're asking on Rabbi Yehuda, who's telling us that in this case it means there is a shiur to it, it has to be enough for him to be able to live off the produce of that land. V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Cholin. One of the later prakim in Masechta Cholin deals with the mitzvah of Reishis Hagez. We know the Torah tells us that when you shear your sheep, one of the 24 Matnas Kohuna is you're supposed to give some of the shearing, some of the wool to the Kohen. The idea being, when you think about it, the 24 Matnas Kohuna are meant to cover all of the needs of a Kohen. You have things of food like truma and Trumas Meiser, and then things like that. You have skins from the Korbanos, you have wool from the sheep, and you have various other things so that they have everything they need in this way. They can be learning and teaching Torah full time. Anyway, so you have this mitzvah of Reishis Hagez. Now, there's a minimum amount, though, that you have to have, both in terms of the number of sheep and the amount of wool that they produce, in order to be chayev in this mitzvah. So the Mishnah says, Yob Geisa ben Harkinas Omer, Chomesh Rechelas Geisa's Mona Mona Upras. Only if you have at least five sheep, and each one of them produces at least a mona and a half's weight of wool. Where we get that figure monopras, Tosfos wonders where the Mishnah gets it from. But apparently, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes in Kovitz Shurim, apparently it's one of these things that's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Anyway, sort of Dosef and Hokina says it has to be that each individual sheep produces a mona and a half's weight of wool, and only then are you chayiv in Reishis Hagez, and only if you have at least five sheep that do that. The five sheep is actually machloikus v'shama v'silo. The halacha is like v'silo, but it's five. V'shama would say that two is enough, but as far as this amount of mono pras, so it needs to be that each one produces at least that amount. A mona, by the way, is 25 sloyim. A sela is usually taken to be a little less than an ounce. So you're talking so a mona would be approximately 20 ounces. So a mona and a half would be approximately 30 ounces. So you're saying that each of the Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas is saying that each of the five sheep has to produce at least approximately 30 ounces worth of at least 30 ounces of wool. V'chom say it doesn't mean the Chum say that each of the five sheep has to produce only kol shehen, only even a small amount. Now, how much is that small amount? V'amrinan, so we discussed in the Gemara there in Cholin, v'kama kol shehen, what is that kol shehen? Does it mean that each of them produces only one strand of wool, and you have to give from it to the Koyan? No, Amar Rav, monopras. No, Rav says that it means that, that between the five of them, they produce the mona and a half. So Rav Dosa ben Hokinas says that each individual sheep needs to produce a mona and a half of wool to be chayiv and reishis ageiz. Rav is saying, according to the Chachamim, that no, it's enough that between all the five of them, it produces mono pras over vachiyu mchumoshes. As long as that you have that each one is producing at least its share, at least 20% of that amount. So meaning, in other words, if you were to have five sheep, and so let's divide the mono pras into five. So if we're saying that a mono pras is approximately 30 ounces, then dividing that in five would be 6 ounces about. So if each of the five sheep produces at least 6 ounces, then between them you have enough for Reishis Hageiz. But if let's say one of them produces seven and another one five and so forth, then you would be potter because there are some of them that are not producing their share towards that total. In any case, the point is that we're saying, even though the Chachamim say kol shehen, Rav is saying that it doesn't actually mean kol shehen. It means that they still have to produce a certain amount, more than just kol shehu. So you see that kol shehu doesn't necessarily mean. So you see that kol shehu doesn't necessarily mean. Even the smallest amount, there is a minimum size there. So then what's bothering Rabbi Yosef? That in our case, Rabbi Yehuda would say that in our Mishnah, when it says Kauka Kol Shehu, it doesn't actually mean Kol Shehu. And the answer is Hosem Bedinhu D'loy Lisni Kol Shehu, because really, it's true. In the Mishnah there, there's no reason for it to say Kol Shehu, given that, as Rav is saying, there is a minimum amount. It should have been that the Mishnah would have said the actual amount that the Chachamim say.
Yeah. And who says that what applies to one case applies to another? I mean, that's also a flawed reasoning.
Well, no.
Applies in one situation, it applies in another, without justification at least.
Right, but we shouldn't assume without justification that the word kol shehu is going to have different meanings in different places. If we find, I mean, obviously in each one it's going to be.
I'm not saying we shouldn't assume. I'm saying if you do assume, you need to bring justifications to the assumption. You cannot assume without justification.
I would say fakir. The word kol shehu has a meaning. Basically, kol shehu means any amount. So if you want to tell me that, that kol shehu in a certain case doesn't actually mean the smallest amount, then you have a basis for saying that it could conceivably mean that in other places as well. So here, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef is insisting kol shehu has to mean even the tiniest amount. And how can Rabbi Yehuda say differently, where we clearly see that Rav in Cholin is saying that kol shehu doesn't always have to mean the smallest amount? And by the way,
you cannot say that kol shehu has a universal meaning all the time. That's excessive.
I don't know about
that.
And
if you do say that,
if you say any amount, then you would take it to mean any amount. So meaning there's no minimum amount. If you're going to say that in a certain case, any amount means it has to actually be at least such and such, then you have a basis for saying that it can mean that in other places as well. The point is, though, what forces Rabbi Yosef to say, here Rabbi Yosef is asking, how can you tell me in our Mishnah Kalka Kol Shehu doesn't mean Kol Shehu, it means a minimum amount, it means enough to live on, when Kol Shehu should mean next to nothing? Well, we answer back to Rabbi Yosef, why? In Cholin we see that it means a minimum amount, it means one-fifth of monopras. So you have a basis for saying that in other places, Kol Shehu could also mean that it's not any amount, that there is a certain minimum size.
The point is,
what forces Rabbi Yosef to say that in our Mishnah, Dafka has to mean any even the tiniest amount, when we see in another scenario that when we see in connection with Reishis HaGez, that it doesn't have, that doesn't necessarily mean that, and it can mean a certain amount that's relevant to that, to that thing over there, and therefore in the same way it could mean that over here as well.
Because there's a third scenario in Chametz, Kol Shihu means Kol Shihu. And
okay,
how come
so
it's
then,
not taken?
Okay, so
it's
then
not,
the point
it's
is,
not raised here.
Okay, so
yeah?
The point is that sometimes you can find that Kol Shihu means even the tiniest amount. Sometimes, as in this example of Reishis HaGez, you can find where it means a certain minimum amount, and below that the din doesn't apply. And yet, Rabbi Yosef is insisting over here that it has to mean the first one. Why? When we have a basis for saying equally well that it could mean the second one. We're not necessarily saying it has to mean that over here, but why is Rabbi Yosef saying that it can only be the other way? In fact,
right, and that's not correct also, yeah.
Okay, let's go on. In fact, Tosfos points out, I mean, you could very well say, look, Rabbi Yosef is entitled to argue with Rav, but still, the Gemara is wondering whether Rabbi Yosef is in fact arguing with Rav on that. Okay, so the answer is, in that case, really the Mishnah shouldn't have said Kol Shehu, because it's true, generally Kol Shehu does mean even the smallest amount. But because Rav Yosef ben Hyrkinas mentions a larger amount, according to him, each of the individual sheep has to produce mono pras to be chayiv in Reishis HaGez. And the Chachamim are answering back with a smaller amount, that's saying that amount that you, Rav Yosef ben Hyrkinas, are saying is split up among the five of them. So therefore, therefore the Mishnah can call it Kol Shehu, even though in fact usually Kol Shehu should mean the smallest amount. So therefore, sort of Yosef's question is valid after all. Really, Kol Shehu should mean the tiniest amount, and there's no minimum value in that particular case.
One second.
Let me finish the sentence, and then ask. But yeah. Normally, basically, Kol Shehu means even the smallest amount. There's no minimum amount that would be called Kol Shehu. In our particular, in the case of Reishis HaGez, because it's by contrast with a larger amount, so therefore we use Kol Shehu to refer to a smaller amount, but still above a certain threshold. In our Mishnah, you don't have that contrast. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef is justified, after all, in saying that Kol Shehu should mean any amount without any minimum, and therefore he's asking on Rabbi Yehuda, who says to the contrary.
Okay, so my question is there a difference between Kol Shehu and Ma Shehu? And if yes,
we're not talking about
why don't
you? This whole sugya over here, we're talking about Kol Shehu.
But that's the question.
Okay, so Ma Shehu is a different matter. If the Mishnah had said Ma Shehu, we could talk about it, but the Mishnah says Kol Shehu. The Mishnah in Cholin also says Kol Shehu. And therefore, we were asking that if over there you have a minimum, you have a floor to it, you have a minimum amount, then the same thing could apply in our Mishnah. And the answer is that no, there it's only by comparison with a larger amount. And here it's not.
What's the meaning of mashihu?
Well, the meaning of mashihu also means a small amount, but that's not the term that we're using, so that's not really relevant over here. All right, let's go on. Okay, so the point is, both parts of Rabbi Yosef's question have been upheld. It's a valid question to ask why the Mishnah uses the word karka if, according to the Yumi Ba'aba, it includes metaltlin as well. And it's a valid question to ask why the Mishnah says Kol Shehu if, according to the Yehuda Amar Rav, there is actually a minimum amount below which the din won't apply. Nonetheless, though, it doesn't necessarily mean that Rabbi Yosef is arguing la halacha with them. He may just be asking where are you getting this from? But nevertheless, the din is still a din. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. So now let's talk about various dinim in terms of when a shivra is giving a gift of his possessions to other people, when we say that omad choizer, that if he recovers from his illness, then he gets it all back, and when do we say that not? So let So, another example of kosher who, meaning a certain minimum amount, Tosfos brings from a Mishnah in Kalim, which is also the same kind of thing, where a Mishnah uses the word kosher who, and it actually means a minimum amount. Same idea, then the Mishnah starts with a larger amount, 4 tefachim, and therefore kosher who can mean, in that case, a tefach. But basically, where you don't have that contrast, as in our Mishnah, then kosher who should mean kosher who, and that's what was bothering Rabbi Yosef. Okay. So, the Gemara says as follows. Shita, it's obvious, as by way of introduction to the other, to the following questions, Omar metaltli leplanya. If a person says, if a shivmana says, my metaltlin should go to Pliny. So then let's figure out what exactly is included in metaltlin. Now, Hagoy Sabach changes actually, you say, the word is not really metaltli, which means just metaltlin in general. It's really supposed to be metaltli, which means my metaltlin. Because in fact, there is the point. We often say miyut rabim shnayim. We often say when we're darshin psukim that when it says that when we have a plural, it means two. So why over here don't we just say that means two metaltlin? So in fact, one explanation that the Ritva answers is just that. If he says metaltli my metaltlin, then we have to assume it means not just two. It means all the ones that apply to it. Means all the ones that belong to him. So now we need to figure out what exactly is included in the definition of metaltlin. The Baal Amor, by the way, gives a different answer. He says, when you have, for example, if a person were to say, my houses or my fields or whatever, then we could talk about that it means only two houses or two fields or what have you. But here what he says, metaltlin, which is a general term that includes many different kinds of assets, then We assume that it means all of them, that means more than just two of each of them, but we have to figure out what kinds of assets are included in the words metaltlin. Obviously, it doesn't include land, but even among other objects, so it means kol money tashmish tekoni, means the other person is koine, all of the utensils and dishes and clothing and whatnot that he, and tools that he uses, levar mechiti v'sairi, with the exception, though, of wheat and barley. Of course, wheat and barley is movable, but Rabbeinu Yohannesson points out they're not. People don't call them metaltlin. People call them by a different name. They call them tzvur. So therefore, they have a special name of their own, and therefore they're not included for this purpose in the term metaltlin. The Rashbam brings his opinion is as well nira be'enai that it also the same thing. It also excludes as animals for the same reason because they have a specialty of their own. So in short, in other words, the Shtimra said that my metaltlin should go to Pliny, so Pliny gets all of his movable items, but not his wheat or barley, and according to the Rashbam, also not his animals. What about if he says, kol metaltli leplanya? What if he says, all of my metaltlin go to Pliny? Then by adding the word kol, it means afilo chiti v'sairi. Then it means that he is including even the wheat and barley, because he is coming to be marba something else, so then that would include the wheat and barley, and I guess according to the Rashbam, also the animals. He would even acquire the upper millstone. Millstones in those times were made, you had two millstones, where they would rotate one on top of the other, and they would grind the grain between them. Typically, the lower millstone was fixed to the ground, was attached to the ground. You could move it, you could take it out of there if you're moving, for example, and bring it to someplace else, but ordinarily it would stay in one place all the time. The upper one you'd take off every so often in order to clean them. So the upper one is considered part of metaltlin as well. But the lower one would be excluded because the lower one is usually kept in place, and when it needs to be fixed or cleaned or whatever, then they do it while it's sitting there on the ground. What about if he says kol din metaltel? If he says anything that can be moved, then afilu rechaim atachtoina koni. Then the recipient is koina even the lower millstone, because after all, it can be moved. It just usually isn't. So it's not actually mechubal akarka. It's just usually because it's heavy, because it's large and heavy. It's usually left in place, but it could actually be moved, and therefore it would be included in kol din metaltel. So now, Iboilahu, so now we have the question, Avda Kimikarka or Kimitaltla Dummy. What about an Eved Knani? Now, there's no question, Rashbam and Tosfos say, when it comes to Dinim Daraisa, then we say that an Eved, as we talked about yesterday, an Eved is considered like Karka. that's relevant, for example, as far as how you acquire him with Kesef Shtar and Chazaka, just like land. It's relevant as far as the dinim of Shvua, that, for example, if somebody claims that you stole my Eved, or whatever, some case where ordinarily in a case of dinim mominus, a person would have to swear. If the claim was on an Eved, then he doesn't have to, and so forth. You have a number of dinim that depend on that point. However, here we're asking, when it comes to the Shrivra, giving away his Metaltalin, when it comes to Loshen B'nai Adam, do we consider them to be part of Karka or not? And therefore, so if he's saying that I'm giving away my Metalkalin, does it include Zavodim or not? Omelet of Acha Breded of Ivyalet of Ashi, Toshma. Come, we can prove from Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, when we were dealing with in the fourth parak the various dinim of when you sell such and such real estate, what exactly is included and what isn't included. So we had a Mishnah over there, Hamoicher Seir, a person sold a city, Mocher Batim, so automatically included in the sale are all the houses in the city. The Mishnah, the Gemara is leaving out over here a few things that are mentioned in the Mishnah over there. Bodus, but anyway, Shichanu Ma'oris, he also sold all the water pits that are in the city. A bur is a round water hole. A shiach is a square or rectangular one, and a ma'ora is one that has a roof over it. Anyway, all of those are included in the city. Or merchatzois, all the bathhouses. Or beis abadin and the olive presses. Or beis asholchin and the fields in the fields there that need to be irrigated. So all of those are actually we talked about over there. Beis asholchin, the usual meaning of beis asholchin is fields that need to be irrigated. There actually we talked about when we learned this a few months ago that here actually beis hashochan doesn't necessarily mean specifically fields that need to be irrigated. It just means the fields that surround the city. So all of those are included in the sale of the city. Ava loyas and metaltalin, but the sale of the city does not automatically include the metaltalin that are in the city. But if the seller says, I'm including the city and everything that's in it, then even if there are animals or avodim knanim in the city, then they're all sold. So let's figure out then. If you tell me avodim are considered like metaltalin, and therefore they wouldn't usually be included unless you say so, mishum hochilem is davan. Bereisha. So therefore that explains why in the Reisha the Eved is not going to be sold, because when he said that he's selling the city, usually it would mean only the real estate and the things that are attached to the ground in the city, and not the avodim. So only if he says all the metaltalin. Eli amet kimakarka dummy, but if you tell me that avodim would be considered like karka, amaylo is daban, then why wouldn't it be sold even in the Reisha? So that shows that an eved is considered, at least in Loshen B'nai Adam, like metaltalin, and therefore that would be the answer. When this shchidmera is saying I'm giving all my metaltalin to Pliny, then yes, it would include the avodim. So the Gemara asks back, the Elamaik in the Talzal Adami. So then what are you going to tell me? So you're saying that you're considering, based on that Mishnah, you want to consider Avodim to be Metaltalin. My Afilu. Then why would the Mishnah have to say even? Obviously, when you sell the city and you say I'm including all the metaltalin, then obviously it would include all the furniture in the city and all the other kinds of metaltalin. So you wouldn't even so the Mishnah shouldn't even need to say afilu avodin, because there'd be no chiddush in it. So doesn't that itself show fakert that avodim are not really considered like metaltalin, and therefore the Mishnah has to say nevertheless in this case you should know they are included. Ella my islachamema. So what are you going to answer? Shani metaltala denied me metaltala denied. After all, you need to draw a distinction between metaltalin that can move on their own and ones that don't. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying avodim and behema, even though they're able to move under their own power, nevertheless they're still included in the sale of the city. And you don't need to say anything about, for example, the furniture and other things like that, where they don't move on their own. Of course, those are included, but the chiddush is even the ones that do move around are included. So therefore, that would be why the Mishnah says afilu. Well, the same way then. So now afilu tamim to makarka adami. Then you could say maybe avodim are included in karka, not only for dinim daraisa, but maybe even in loshim bnei adam. But you could say shani makarka denayed, makarka adlonayed. Still, you could draw a distinction between karka that moves on its own and karka that does not, and you would say, so when he sells the city and does not specify who he v'chomash v'seicha, then you would say all of the real estate in it that's not movable is sold, and that would include all the various the houses and water pits and whatnot that the Mishnah had mentioned. But when it comes to avodim, even though they're considered like karka, nevertheless the fact is they move around and behemoth, then they move around, and therefore they wouldn't be included in the in that definition of karka. So maybe, in other words, the word metaltlin does include avodim, or maybe not. Maybe they're considered part of karka, but there's a difference between two different types of karka, essentially. So no proof from there, one way or the other, really, about this case of the shchiv mara over here.
Avodim don't move around wherever they want to go. They have to stay with their masters.
Well, they have to stay where their master tells them. But the point is, in other words, that they don't get dragged around, right? They have a brain, they have feet, they're able to walk around on their own. In other words, yes, the master tells them where to go, but they have within that they have the freedom of movement. You decide you want a piece of furniture someplace. It's not going to pick up and walk. It's not going to pick itself up and walk over there. But you tell your Evan, I want you to be in such and such a place. He's going to pick himself up and walk over there. That's the difference. Animals also.
So what's the rule then?
That's what we're trying to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
We know that for dinim daraisa and eved is considered like karka. For example, again, as far as shvua and kinyan and various other things, the question is now, it's clear, fine, from the case of the mission over there about selling a city. You could say either way. You could say the Eved, the wording of the Mishnah, afilu avodim, suggests that avodim are kind of in a class of their own, somewhere between karka and metaltlin. Well, the question is, how does that apply to a shchiv mara giving away his metaltlin? So, omale Ravina, l'Ravashi toshma. So Ravina says to Ravashi, come, let's bring a proof from the from a braisa that we brought before in our sugya. We said it's a mission. Really, it's a mission in Peah that we discussed yesterday. A kosev la'avdei kol nechosev, or really supposed to be kol nechosev la'avdei. A person writes out a document giving all of his nechosim to his eved, yotza ben chorin. Then that eved goes free, because when he gives all of his nechosim, the eved himself is part of them. Whether you say an eved is karka or metaltlin, he's definitely part of nechosim. So therefore, when he says, I'm giving you all of the nechassim, meaning he's giving him his own freedom. So therefore, the eved goes free, and therefore he's acquiring the nechassim. So yotze ben chorin, so he goes free, and he gets all of the nechassim. Shir karka kol shehu, but if the master in this document left out and said, I'm reserving for myself a certain part of karka, kol shehu, any amount, and here we don't necessarily have a reason to say that kol shehu shouldn't mean even the smallest amount. So lo yotza ben chorin, we said the slave does not go free. Does that mean because the eved himself is considered part of karka? That's what we're going to deal with over here. So far it sounds like because the eved is part of karka, then therefore if he reserves for himself karka kol shehu without specifying a particular piece of land, then it means maybe he meant to keep the eved for himself. Well, if he means to keep the eved for himself, well then masha kona eved kona rabbi, so he's not going free and he's not acquiring anything. And the Mishnah continues. Reb Shimon Omer lo olam hu ben chorin. Reb Shimon says no. Either way, the slave would go free. Even if he said I'm reserving for himself some karka, ad sheyomer, unless the master says kol nechosin esunin l'pleini avdi, all of my nechosim are given to pleini my eved, chutz me echad me riba shebehen, except for 1/10,000 of them. So because then we say that maybe he means that the eved maybe then it means that he considers that eved to be part of the metaltlin, Or as Rashi explains elsewhere, maybe he's implicitly insulting the Eved over there and saying, you know, to you, as far as I'm concerned, you're worth only 1/10,000th of the Nechassim. Whatever the case, the point is that in other words, in that case, then Reb Shimon says he's not necessarily freeing the Eved, and if he's not freeing the Eved, then there's nothing for the Eved to acquire because Mashkana Eved Kana Rabbi. There, Amr Rab Dimi Bar Yosef, Amr Rab Elazar, and as we learned before, as we learned at the top of the Amud, Rab Dimi Bar Yosef had said in the name of Rab Elazar, Osim Metaltalim Shir Eitzel Eved. When it comes to this din with an Eved and the document that's written out, the same way as the Mishnah had said that if he reserves any karka for himself, then the Eved doesn't go free. The same rule would apply if he reserved for himself any amount of Metaltalim, because after all, the Eved is in the category of metalman as well. But like also metalman shiur etz ksuba. But when it comes to a ksuba, which is meant to be collected only from land, then if he reserved for his wife a certain amount of metalman, then it doesn't mean that she's forfeited her right to collect the ksuba from the land after her husband dies. We're gonna discuss that point about ksuba in a little bit. And in fact, Rava asks Rav Nachman, why is there the difference? My time, what is the reason? Why distinguish between Avodim and Ksuba? And Rav Nachman explains, Avdim Metaltalahu, because an Eved is Metaltalin, or Metaltalah have a Shir. So what are you saying? He's saying, I'm giving away all my Nechosim, but I'm reserving for myself some Metaltalin. Well, the Eved is in the category of Metaltalin. And therefore, so when he says I'm reserving for himself, some metaltalin, when the master says that, it means, maybe he means to reserve for himself some metaltalin, which means including the Eved himself. So in other words, basically, why is he writing out this document in the first place? Is to make the Eved feel good. The Eved has been maybe a little bit in a rebellious mood, you know, what am I working for you and I'm going to end up working for the rest of my life and I'm not going to get anything out of it. So the master writes about a document, you know what, here, fine, I'm going to set you free and I'm going to give you my nechosim, but he does it in a tricky way by saying I'm reserving for myself some metaltalin, and then when the Eved goes to Beis Din with this document, they're going to tell him, sorry, you're part of metaltalin as well, and therefore he didn't mean to free you, he was just doing that for appearance's sake. So you can say metaltalin includes some of the word that he's leaving for himself. Some metaltalin includes other metaltalin, namely the Eved. Or ksubas isha makarka, who wears a woman's ksuba, is meant to be collected from karka. Or metaltalol makarka lo yhavishir. So therefore, if he gives her some metaltalin, as a special bequest in his will, then nevertheless, it doesn't impinge on her ability to collect her ksuba from karka later on. So that would seem to be the answer. Then we see from that discussion that avodim are considered like metaltalin. However, the Gemara says, Omalei, but Rav Ashi says there's so Ravina had brought that proof to Rav Ashi that you see from what Rav Nachman says, you see that Avodim are considered like Metaltalin. Omalei, but Rav Ashi answers back, not necessarily. No, because we have a different understanding of what the problem is. Why such a shtar matana to an eved is not valid? It has nothing to do with karka versus metaltalin. It's something else rather. When it comes to a get, when a man divorces his wife, we know it has to be get krisus. It has to be, it completely cuts off the relationship between them. Therefore, for example, there were dinim that come up in Masechta Gittin, if there's some kind of ongoing relationship still between them, some kind of ongoing financial relationship between them, or something like that, then the get is not valid if he reserved for himself something or whatever. So now we learn the fact that an eved goes free with a shtar, we learn that from a get. So therefore, if the master then is keeping for himself any rights in the shtar, it doesn't matter. Maybe the eved is considered like karka, but the very fact that he's keeping for himself some rights in the shtar and saying that I'm keeping for myself some metaltalin, that itself means that it's not korus, it's not a delav krus gita, masninamal, it's not a complete cutting off with the shtar. So therefore, it's not a get krisus, and therefore it's possible. And therefore it doesn't work, and therefore the Eved doesn't go free. So therefore, says Rav Ashi, to Ravina, you have no proof from there that it's a matter of an Eved being like Kalko or like Metalfman, respectively. No matter what you consider him like, the fact is that once the master is reserving for himself something, then you don't have Korus. That's the Rashbam brings that explanation from Rabbeinu Hanano and also from his Rebbeim in Leuser, which is it's an area of nowadays basically on the borderlands of France and Germany called Lorraine. It was in the early times of the Rishonim. It was a major place where there were many great Talmid Chachamim. We call them Chachme Leuser. And so the Rashbam says that what we just said, the explanation we just said, comes among other things from them. But then the Rashbam brings another explanation is that we could say that he himself is not clear on whether he considers the Eved to be Metaltlin or Karka. Since he didn't specify what Metaltlin he's keeping for himself, then maybe we could say that he does mean the Eved to be considered part of Metaltlin. That doesn't show, though, that by a shivmerah giving away his property, that we shouldn't say that the Eved is considered metaltlin. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You really can't prove from that one way or the other. In addition, also, so that's that. So according to the Rashbam, then the Omer Lay that we have over here is Rav Ashi replying to Ravina. He's saying, Ravina, you're telling me that you want to bring a proof from that discussion of Rava and Rav Nachman, and I'll tell you that it's not a proof because the issue there is not because I would tell you that the issue is not the reason is not because of what Rav Nachman says about Metaltlin versus Karka, but rather because you don't have Kurus Gita. Tosfos explains that Rav Ashi is not giving a svara of his own. He's saying, you should know, Ravina, when we learn this discussion of Rav Nachman and Rava, we have a different version of that discussion, namely that Rav Nachman answers to Ravina, that Rav Nachman answers to Rava, that the reason why it doesn't work is because you don't have Kurus Gita, because the Get Shichru is not completely cutting off the relationship. So basically, in other words, according to the Rashbam, this is Rav Ashi is saying, I know that Rav Nachman said that, but I would disagree with Rav Nachman and I would give a different reason. Whereas according to Tosfos, Rav Ashi is saying, that's not the reason that Rav Nachman gave. Our version of the discussion is that Rav Nachman gave a different reason. Either way, the point is, you don't really have a proof one way or the other from that, as far as whether an Eved is considered Metaltlin. Now, in the end, as far as the Halacha, the Rif discusses and says that earlier in our Masechta, we did learn that a Baal Chayv can't collect an Eved as payment for a loan. So therefore, so the Rif says on that basis, it means that we see Rav Nachman Omar Ein Goyvin. The Gemara had said over there, Rav Nachman had said you can't collect from Avodim in payment of a debt because it's when the Baal Chayv died, because then it's Metaltlin that belonged to Yisraimim, and a Baal Chayv can't take from those. So that would mean, that's it, the halacha is that avodim are considered metaltlin, and that would be relevant as far as our din over here of the shchivmera. On the other hand, the Shikim Kubetzis points out, and the point it brings from an earlier rishon, who says in that case, the Gemara should have mentioned that point over here. So you would say in the end that it would be left as a suffix and only a motzi machavel of araya. So in the end, in Shulchan Aruch, then, the Shulchan Aruch paskins according to the Rif, and the reason is, despite what the Shittim Kubetzis says, the fact is that people do usually, in Loshen B'nei Adam, Metaltlin do include Avadim. So the answer would be that if he says, I'm giving my Metaltlin to Pliny, then yes, it does include his Avadim as well. As a side point, by the way, as far as that we said, that with a ksuba is meant to be collected from land. So there is actually eventually the time of the Geonim, there's different reasons where that's explained why it is that a ksuba is meant to be collected only from Karka, various Lomdish explanations behind it. But in any case, there came a point during the time of the Geonim when they made a takona that no. pretty much anything in halacha that involves the requirement to have karka also is going to apply to metaltalim. There came a point when historically many Jews didn't own land anymore because of various rules and regulations in different lands of the Golos that the Christians and Muslims had imposed. So it became uneconomical and sometimes outright illegal for Jews to own land. So therefore, so the Goyim made a takana that many things in halacha that involve only karka do involve metaltalin as well. One of them is this matter of ksuba, that they made a takana that in fact after that a woman can in fact collect her ksuba from metaltalin. They used a precedent that the Gemara mentions about even in the times of the Gemara. There were certain places where you could, so they used that, they extended that precedent and made it universal. Nonetheless, the Rambam points out, usually the fact is, people may not be familiar with the Takana of the Goyim, so eventually they started writing in Ksubas, and this is how we have the standard Nusach in our Ksubas nowadays, that where the husband explicitly takes on himself that I'm taking a shibud on all of my metaltlin when I'm living and after I'm gone and so forth, and that way when she comes to collect her Ksuba, she can collect from metaltlin even if the husband's Yoshim would say we're not familiar with this Takana of the Goinim, nevertheless we would show them, look, it says in the Ksuba explicitly that your father took on this shibud. Fine. Continuing on this topic of giving away all of the chosim, Omer Rava, Chamisha ad sheyichtevu kol nechseihem. There are five cases when a person gives a matana or makes a certain declaration in a shtar, and it's not considered, and then there's a difference between whether he gives all of it or some of it. In other words, for example, with a shchivmera, I was saying that the special dinim of a matnas shchivmera, the din that Im Omar Choyzer applies only if he, one of the special dinim of that Im Omar Choyzer applies only if he gave all, but not if he gave only part of it. So Rav Nachman, so Rava is pointing out, in the name of Rav Nachman, we have a number of other cases like that where there's a difference between giving everything or giving some of it. The Elohein, and they are as follows. Shchivmera, Avdoi, Ishtoi, Uvonov, Umavrachas. So four of the five of them we've already dealt with in our Masechta. The fifth one, Mavrachas, we're going to deal with over here in more detail. But let's first go through them in brief. Shchivmera, Ditnan, we said in our Mishnah. Shchivmera, Shekosev, Kol Nechosev, Lachayim. That if a Shchivmera wrote out a document giving all of his Nechosim to others, Vashir, Karka, Kol Shehu, and he reserved for himself any amount of Karka, which, okay, we had before of Yehuda telling us that it doesn't literally mean any amount, it means enough for him to continue living off of. Then matnase kayemes. Then his gift is irrevocable. Loy shiu karka kol shehu. But if he didn't leave over any karka, ein matnase kayemes. Then his matana is revocable. If he recovers. So there's one of the five cases where we see that there's a difference between giving everything and giving only some things. And there we had Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba saying that the same thing would be if he kept for himself metaltalin. The point is, in other words, that there's a difference between whether he gives everything or only some things. Next, Avdoi. Then we have the case of the slave, this Mishnah from Peah that we've been quoting a number of times in this Sugya. A Kosev called Nechosev L'Avdoi, where he writes out a document giving all of his Nechosim to his Eved. Yotze ben Chorin, and the Eved goes free because he's part of the Nechosim, and it means therefore that he's given him himself. But Shir Karka Kol Shehu, but if he left for himself any amount of Karka, and we were discussing before whether that means also Metaltlin, Lo Yotze ben Chorin, then the Eved does not go free, because again, maybe the master intended for the Eved to be reserved still for himself, so therefore he hasn't gone free, and if he hasn't gone free, then he can't be Koina. So there's another example where you see there's a difference of giving all or giving only some. The third one, Ishtoi, is a case involving his wife, which we've learned previously in our Masechta, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, HaKosev Kol Nechosev LeIshtoi. When a man writes out a document to his wife that he's giving her all of his Nechosim, Lo Yasa El Apatrupa. So we said he's not actually giving her all of the Nechosim. He's not meaning with that to disinherit his children. It just means that he's making her a trustee over it so that his Yoshim should have respect for her. But there would only be if he gave her all the Nechosim, whereas if he reserved some of the Nechosim for himself, or reserved it for others, then we would say that in fact it does it means an actual gift to her and not just making her an apotropa. So again, there's another example where there's a difference between there's a major difference between giving all and giving some. Bonav, then we have the case of his children, also that we've been discussing that we learned in the previous parak, and we also discussed on Or Aleph, Hakosev Kol Nechosev Levonav, that he writes out a document giving all of his Nechosev to his children, the cost of the Ishtei Karka Kol Shehu, and in that document he also writes that his wife is going to get a small amount of Karka. Ibda Ksubasa, then we say she loses the right to collect her Ksuba from any other karka that belong to the husband. Normally she has a shibur on all the karka that the husband had left, that's in the hands of the yoshim, but now when she was willing to accept this bequest of a small amount of karka, then we said it means that she's forfeiting her right to collect from the rest of the karka, because we said she's moichel the shibur of her ksuba for the sake of this matana. We discussed over there in detail, actually, that the Rashbam learns throughout that sugya, and also over here, that it doesn't mean she's forfeited her ksuba entirely, it just means she's forfeited her right to collect from the karka that belongs to the yesomim. Whereas the Rimi Gash had learned that it might mean that she forfeits the right to collect her ksuba altogether. In any case, that's only when he wrote out so there's a difference, again, whether he wrote all of his nechosim going to his children and gave karka kol shehu to the wife, versus if he had written a document giving everything to his children, then she's still soimach on that she can collect from that karka, and if he had reserved for himself some, then we would actually say, we learned also in that sugya, that it's one thing when he gives away all of his nechosim to others, but when he reserves some of it for himself, where then she still has the right to collect from that, because he has a shibud to her on that, then once she has a shibud on that, then she retains the shibud on the rest of the property, even though he gave it away as well. So again, there you have a difference. If he had given all of his nechosim to his children and one small amount to her, then she would forfeit the right to collect from anything else. But if he gave to his children and kept one small part for himself, then she would have the right to collect from everything. So there's another difference. There's another din where you see there's a difference between writing, we're giving away everything versus giving away some things. Now let's deal with the fifth one, which is something that's not really discussed, anywhere else. The Rashbam points out this fifth one called Mavrachas. It's mentioned briefly in a Gemara in Ksubas, but you really don't have, outside of our Gemara, a source for it. Mavrachas is as follows. Mavrachas literally means she's trying to make it run away. So the case is, an almana wants to get remarried. She has property of her own. Now, normally, that property is going to go into the marriage. It's going to become nichsi tzon barzel or nichsi malug, as the case may be. Let's say she doesn't want to do that. She wants to keep those nechosim independent of her husband. So that way, in other words, we said that her husband would end up yarshining her, as we learned in the previous perek. So she'd want to write out a document giving away those nechosim to somebody else, so that her husband doesn't get them. So that's called mavrachas. She's trying to get it. She's trying to make it escape from her husband's control. So here we have also a din, whether it's all of it or some of it. De Omamar, namely, we learn in Ksubas on this subject, Mavrachas, Sricha Shetichtiv Kol Nechoseha. If she wants to do this kind of thing and keep the Nechosim out of her husband's control, it would only work in such a way that she gets to get them afterwards, after her husband dies, or she gets divorced, only if she writes out all of her nechosim. So she wrote out a document, she's giving all of her nechosim to somebody else, then it means that she's doing it only for mavrachas, and it means that it means the other guy doesn't truly own them. But if she had kept, one of those cases, Anan Sadi, we could be Adim, that she surely wouldn't have done that, she's only doing that for the purpose of being able to get married and to be able to keep it out of her husband's control, and not that she actually truly meant to give it away to this other person. But if she left over anything for herself, then again, we would say that the Makabel is receiving all of it and she's never going to get it back. So the Rashbam points out that this is, again, this is something you don't really find this explicitly elsewhere in the Gemara, but that's based on this Gemara and based on that brief mention in the Gemara in Ksubas, then we have that implication. So that would be another case, again, where there's a difference between giving away everything versus giving only some. So the Rashbam actually points out, based on that Gemara in Ksubas, which mentions also in that connection of Machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim on the subject, where also you see that the Rashbam explains that there is a difference also between Bekulon and Mektsasan. If she writes Kulon, then the other guy is not Koina, and neither is her husband. It doesn't mean that in that case, if she wrote out only some of them, then The only way that it would work is if she writes a different lashon, mehayoyim l'chsheretze. It takes effect as of today, but only when I decide that it should be like that. So again, there's a difference between writing all of it and writing only some of it. Tosfos discusses that. Tosfos points out that there's also a case that we learned in the previous perek, where also there's a difference between kol mechosav and only some of it, but they are strictly speaking, Tosfos says, first of all, it doesn't mean kol mechosav, it just means that there has to be, that he wrote out, that he reserved an amount more than huksuba, and also, because beplugged aloy kamayri, you could say that there it's a machloikas, it's a machloikas, Rebbe Eliezer, and the chachamim, and then we're not, Reb Nachman's rule over here is dealing only with cases when there's no machloikas. Now here you have the machlokas of Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, but nevertheless they do basically agree with the point that she's giving away all the machlokas. Marshal and Marshal discuss that further and what exactly is the nature of the machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. But the point is, in other words, that Reb Nachman includes that in his rule over here, that again, only if she writes this document, including all of her nechosim, would it have one status, and if she writes it with including only some of her nechosim, then it has a different status. Okay. And Reb Nachman continues, Ovechulu metalpli habishir. Now, in four of these five cases, whether he reserves for himself karka or metalpli, either way, that's considered that he's left something out, and therefore it would be a matana b'mitzvah. So, in the case of the shchiv merah, as we said, even if he keeps for himself only some metalpli, means that the rest of the gift is irrevocable, even if he recovers. And the same thing with the eved and the rest of the cases. Levar miksuba, with the exception of the ksuba, da'amakarki takinu rabbanim metalpli lo takinu. Because the Chachamim made the takana of ksuba to be collected only from karka, not from metaltlin. So if he reserved for himself some metaltlin that and gave away all the karka, that still wouldn't prevent her from collecting from the rest of the karka. So only if he gave her some karka. And then we would say that ibdik subasa. Amema says that actually even when it comes to a ksuba, metaltli diksibi ksuba isnu beinayu, when you have metaltlin that were written into the ksuba as nichsetzon barzel, if they still exist, habi shir, then if he says that I'm reserving those for her, then that's considered a shiur. Then after all, she can collect from those without a shvua. So that would still be considered like the equivalent of leaving her some karka, and it means she's expecting to collect her ksuba only from those, and she's moichel her shibud on the rest of the karka. So again, after the time when the Goinim made the takana about collecting a ksuba from a taltlin, then the din would be different. But here we're talking about, according to the original din of the Gemara, that normally only karka is under a shibud to the ksuba. So the Gemara continues now. Now, let's talk more about this, about these dinim of matnas shchivra. So far, we said as follows, we discussed on Amud Aleph, that if he says, my metaltlin go to Pliny, or all of my metaltlin, or anything that could be moved, what about another thing that he might say? What if he says, Omar nechosei leplanya. If he says my nechosim go to Pliny, so here this could apply to a shimra. It would also apply to a body, to a healthy person, if a kinyan was made. As usual, with a matnas body, it requires a kinyan, a matnas shimra does not. So what exactly is included in nechosim? Let's go through the various kinds of things that he owns and see what would be included in nechosim. And at the end, the Gemara is going to ask about one particular thing, whether it's included or not. So, Abde Ikri Nichsi. We can be sure that an Eved is considered Nechosin. So therefore it would be included in the in the bequest, in the gift. As far as the last thing, by the way, when Amemar says at the end of it here, he says metalpid that are written in the Ksuba, Rashbam points out actually that Amemar says something along those lines also in Ksuba, so it means that the fact that she can collect them without a Shvua, so therefore Amemar is mentioning that is mentioning this over here, and he's being consistent with what he says over there. Okay. So again, so Omer Nechosei Leplanya. If he's saying my Nechosin go to Pliny, so let's work out what is and isn't included in Nechosin. Gilin Ashas brings actually that there's a Girsa that they're based on Tosfos Uliu in the Masechta. The Girsa would be that he says Kol Nechosei. Because if he says Nechosei, then you can talk about which specific Nechosin, but when he says Kol Nechosei, then it means all of them. So we have to figure out what is included in Nechosei. So, Avde Ikri Nichsi, no question that Avodim are considered part of Nechosim, and we can prove that to Tanan, because we have from the Mishnah that we quoted several times, a Kosev called Nechosev Avde Yotze Ben Chorin. He writes out a document that he gives all of his Nechosim to his Eved, then the Eved goes free. Why? Because the Eved himself is included in Nechosim. Next, Ara Ikri Nichsi, also land is considered part of Nechosim, the Tanan. As we know from Mishnah and Ksubas, Nechosim Shiesh Lahen Achrayus, Nechosim that have Achrayus, namely land, that there's Achrayus in the sense that a Baal Choiv can always collect them in payment of his debt, even from Yisroelim. And his main Smichus Das is on that. Nechosim Shiesh Lahen Achrayus, Niknin the Kesef of Shar V'Chazaka, those can be acquired with Kesef Shar and Chazaka. So we see that land is called Nechosim in that Mishnah. Next, Glimmer Ikri Nichsi, we see that clothing is considered part of Nechosim, and we also have a Mishnah for that, the Tznan, because that same Mishnah continues, She'en Lahen Achrayus, other kinds of Nechosim, the Taltlin, that do not have Achrayus, because, for example, Baal Choyv can't ordinarily collect from them, Ein Niknin Elam Mashicha, those can be acquired only with Mashicha. But the point is, we still see the Mishnah calls them Nechosim, they're just a different type of Nechosim, Nechosim She'en Lahen Achrayus. The Mishnah hadn't said the word Nechosim again. It said Nechosim Shiesh Lahen Achrayus, because of Shtar V'Chazaka, Visha Ein Lahen Achrayus, but it means, and those that have no Achrayus, so it's as if the Mishnah had repeated the word Nechosim. Next, Zuzi Ikri Nichti. We know that coins, we know that money is considered Nechosim, and we can prove that. Because that same Mishnah says, because the Mishnah continues over there, She'en Lahen Achrayus, Nechosim that have no Achrayus, namely, for example, any kind of Metalflin, Niknim in Nechosim, She'esh Lahen Achrayus, Bekesev of Shtar of Chazaka. They can be acquired with Nechosim, She'esh Lahen Achrayus, via Kesev Shtar of Chazaka. Meaning this is Kinyan Agav that we've learned about many times before. We last talked about it a couple of days ago, that you can be Machna to somebody Karka, and along with it, you're Machna to him Metalflin, and the Metalflin don't even have to be located in the Karka. And we know that coins are included for that purpose. Kihod Rapapa, as we have the story with Rapapa, which we also learned earlier in our Masechta, Havolei Treisa Alfi Zuzi Bechizoi, he had 12,000 Zuz in Bechizoi that belonged to him. Now there's a machlokas we've shown him, and Tosfos discusses it earlier in the Masechta and in a few other places in Shas where the story is brought. Is it that he was owed that money, or is it that the money was a pikodin? There being a difference, because if it's a pikodin, then it belongs to him outright. If he's owed the money, then it's not necessarily be'ein. The question is going to be, because he was going to be makne to somebody with kinyan agav, would that actually work with a halva where the money is not necessarily be'ein, the money doesn't necessarily exist right now? In any case, so the gius that we have in front of us is havalei that he had, which would mean that it was a pikadon that he had previously deposited over there. But the other possibility Tosfos discusses earlier is that the gius might be the masik that he was owed 12,000 zuz. Whatever the case, this was in Bechazoi, in an area. Bechazoi is nowadays part of Iran. It was a long distance away from Bavel, from where Rapapa lived. So he wanted to send Rav Shmuel Ba'acha as his shliach to go bring him the money. Now the problem is if Rav Shmuel Ba'acha doesn't have a kinyan on that money, then the people in Bechazoi should say, why should we entrust you with the money? You don't have any achrayus on it. If it gets lost or stolen or what have you on the way, then we're still going to be on the hook. So Rav Papa had to be machna that money to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha. How's he going to do that if the money is not located over there? Akninu ni'alei Rav Shmuel Ba'acha agav asefa debesei. So it was machna to him, agav, the threshold of his house. So he's machna to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, the threshold, and with it, by Kinyan agav, then he's acquiring the coins wherever they are. And that works. The word asefa debase means the threshold of his house, although there are some Rishonim who say that it means the edge of his house. Whatever the case, the point is that there was some kind of karka. And he also, when Rav Shmuel Ba'acha came back with the money, Nofak La'afe Ad Tavach, Rav Papa went all the way to Tavach to meet him. So the Rashbam brings what's the relevance of that? Some say, so first of all, Tavach maybe is the name of a place. Then some say that Tavach means halfway down the road. So then the Rashbam says, some Mephoshim want to explain the reason is because he wanted to make sure that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha is not going to end up being machzik in the money for himself. But no, the Rashbam says, because he had written him our shah, he had written him a power of attorney entitling him to collect the money, so that means he made him a shliach, and he doesn't actually need to go and meet him on the way to collect the money from him. So rather he went out there because out of simcha, he was so happy that he had gotten his money, that he went all the way to meet him on the way. Then there were Rishonim who learned that it means he wanted to make sure that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha doesn't come home and actually make a chazaka on his threshold, and then he would have to buy it back from him. So therefore, he met him on the way before Rav Shmuel Ba'acha is able to make a chazaka on the threshold. Whatever the case, we see from that story that Rav Papa was able to be makne that money to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha through Kinyan Agav, and since the Mishnah in Kiddushin mentions that you can do that that you can acquire through Kinyan Agav and in Nechosim, so we see that coins are included in Nechosim. Next, Shtore Ikra Nichsi, we can also demonstrate that Shtores are included in Nechosim. So again, the Shchiv Merah, or a healthy person with a Kinyan, is saying that I'm giving all my Nechosim to Pliny, so it includes the Shtores, where that people owe him money. And we know that they're included in Nechosim. De'omer Rabba Bar Yitzchok Shnei Shtores saying, because Rabba Bar Yitzchok tells us there's different ways in which a shtar can be written about the sale of a field. So you can have that the shtar was written out, but the makabel hasn't received it yet. Omar zchu b'sodah zelaplani. If he says, if the owner of the field says to two people, you make a kinyan sodah and you're going to acquire this field on behalf of Plani, v'kistvoloy is a shtar, and write out for him a shtar as a raya. So they had done that. They made the kinyan. They wrote the shtar. They didn't give it to him yet. The original owner of the field is able to retract that they shouldn't give him the shtar, but he can't retract about the field itself. So they've already acquired the field on behalf of this other guy, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to take that back. But he would have the ability to tell them that I don't want you to write out the shtar after all. The shtar is only meant as a raya that he owns the field. He doesn't really need that in order to acquire the field. So he's able to take that back and to say that they shouldn't write the shtar. We had a long sugya earlier in our Masechta about the whole matter of osius nipnis b'mesira, when a person says to write out a shtar that not necessarily is that valid yet. So that's one. So that's one case. Then you have, on the other hand, amanach shetichtu v'loy sashtar. But if he says make a kinyan and you'll acquire the field for him, almanas on the condition that you're going to write the shtar. So then choza ben b'shtar ben b'sada. Then he's able to change his mind both about the shtar and about the field, because then he's saying that the two things are tied together. And there's not going to be a kinyan unless the shtar is written. So once he's able to revoke the shtar, then the kinyan is revoked as well, because it was al tanai. Rav Chiya ba'Oven, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Chiya ba'Oven says in the name of Rav Yehuda, I'm not actually disagreeing with Rav about Rav Yitzchak, but I would add that there's another case as well. Shloisha shtar saying, there's really three. Trei Hani Damaran, the two that we said, the two that Rav about Yitzchak had said. Idach, and then you have a third case. Im Kodam Moicher, because of a shtar, if the moicher wrote out the shtar before they ever made the kinyan, so he wants to have it ready for the lekeach whenever he sells in the field, and that would work. That works, as we learn, as we're going to learn in the last parak of On Masechta. You are able to write a shtar for the seller even if the lekeach is not with him, because if there's going to be any loss, it's going to be on the moicher's side. If later on that shtar gets lost and it winds up in the hand of the lekeach, and he says, here, I have a shtar that you sold me this field, tough luck on the moicher. Why'd you write out the shtar early? So such a thing would work. So if such a shtar was written out before the sale actually took place, then Rav Chiya ba'Oven tells us, kivin shehechzik zeh b'karka, then the din would be that once the other guy, once the lekeach does a chazaka in the field, nik neshtar kol makom shehu, then he acquires automatically the shtar wherever the shtar is, and again he can't prevent him from getting the shtar. V'zuhi shishaninu. This is an example of what we just said. Nachosim she'en la nachrayus niknim and nachosim she'esh la nachrayus bekesef of shtar of a chazaka. That nachosim she'en la nachrayus metalflin can be acquired together with nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus, with karka, with kesef shtar of chazaka. So therefore, once the sale of the karka is final, then the shtar is automatically acquired with it. So we see, since we're using that mishnah about nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus being acquired with nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus, so we see that a shtar is included in the category of nechosim. So again, the shchivmana or the bari says, I'm giving my nechosim, then it includes shtoris as well. Earlier in the Masechta, when we learned this din about writing the shtar before the mechira, the Rashbam had dealt with in detail what the potential issues are and what it means as far as a shibud and so on and so forth. In any case, the point is that here we see that a shtar is included in the chosim. Next, we can also prove behema ikrin nirsi. We can also prove that animals are considered nechosim, and therefore that when he says, I'm giving my nechosim, that it includes animals. As we learn in a Mishnah in Shkolin, hamaknish nechosav, a person donates his nechosim to hektish. Now, suppose that among those nechosim was an animal that's suitable to be brought as a korban. Now, you have a general rule that when you makdish an animal that's capable of being brought as a korban, that it has to be somehow it, or its value is going to be brought as a korban. So you have to have a machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the mission over here. Here the Gemara is just quoting Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, which is the halacha. Zechorim oilus, any male animals among them are to be brought as oilus, because they can be, an oila can only be a male animal. Nekevis, any female animals which can't be brought as an oila, so that yimochru tzolchei zivcha shlamim, you sell them to people who need to bring a shlamim, and then you use the money for other korbanos. The reason why you do it that way, the reason why, according to Rabbi Yeshua, you don't bring the females as themselves as shlomim, is because since he said that he wants it to go to Hekdish, means it has to be completely the property of Hekdish. And Ola is completely burnt on a mizbeach, so it's completely the property of Hekdish. A shlomim, the owners eat most of the meat, so therefore it can't be considered that. Therefore he says that it's going to need to be sold to somebody who will actually bring it as a shlomim, but the monetary value of it, which is really what he was makdish, is going to have to be used for an ola. The point is, again, the Mishnah says, HaMakdish Nechosav, and it includes animals. So we see that animals are included in the Chosav. Likewise, Oifus Ikri Nichzi, we can also demonstrate that birds are considered in the Chosim for the same reason. Another Mishnah says over there, the next Mishnah says, HaMakdish Nechosav, V'hoi Ben Dvarim Re'uyim, HaRe'uyim L'gabim Izbeach. So if he was Makdish as Nechosim and there were other things in them that are capable of being brought as Karbonis, for example, Yenus Shmonim V'Oifus, if it includes wine or oil, which can be brought from the Sochim, or birds, which can also be brought as Karbonis, so then the Mishnah describes what you do with them. So again, you see that birds are considered nechasim. Tfilin ikri nichsi, and we can also demonstrate that a person's tfilin are considered part of his nechasim as well. Just now, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, hamakdish nechasav malin loy tfilin. A person is makdish as nechasim, then we have to evaluate the value of his tfilin. So the word malin literally means to lift up. So does it mean, the Mephoshim discuss over there, does it mean that we take away his tefillin from him and he can't wear them because they belong to Hekdesh until he buys it back from Hekdesh? Or does it mean to begin with Malin, we figure out the value, we evaluate the value of them, and that's included in his bequest to Hekdesh? Whatever the case, we see that tefillin are considered part of Nechosin. So now that we went through all of that, Iboy Elohu Sefer Torah Mai. So now comes the question, the last one in the chain over here, what about a Sefer Torah? Is a Sefer Torah included in the Chosin? So the point is, Kivin Dele Mizdaban, now on the one hand, you can't freely sell a Sefer Torah. Unlike all Nechosim, where you have your right to sell whatever you want, whenever you want, pretty much, a Sefer Torah, you can't. Because you have a halacha that you can't ordinarily sell a sefer Torah. It's because of the kedusha of it. So therefore, lav nichsihu, maybe it's not considered nechasin. Oiduma kivin demizdaben lumen Torah v'lisa isha. Or maybe since the halacha is there are cases where you could sell it, where you need money to go and learn Torah and support yourself while you're learning v'lisa isha, to get married nichsihu, then maybe the sefer Torah to that extent is considered nechasin. So that would be the question. The Rashbam actually seems to not have, and the Marashal also takes out the words in the Gemara Kivin Dele Mizdaban. The question is rather, do we consider a Sefer Torah like tefillin? We would say tefillin is something that you wear. A Sefer Torah is only a mitzvah, or maybe we would say even if you could sell it, it's not considered nechasim. Or maybe since you do have certain cases, so it's not even a matter of that you're not normally allowed to sell it, but a matter of that normally it's meant for the mitzvah. However, there are certain cases where you sell it. Tosfos also points out that when it comes to acquiring a Sefer Torah, there's no question that it's considered like other metaltelin. You can acquire it with chazaka, with meshicha, rather with meshicha, or with kinyan agav karka, just like other metaltelin. But the question is over here, maybe it's still not considered nechasim because once you bought it, then you can only sell it for these kinds of purposes. So the Gemara says teku, so that one, we're leaving as teku, and therefore you don't have a clear answer of whether a Sefer Torah is considered part of Nechosim. So in short, in other words, when a Shchiv Merah says, or a Bori with a Kinyan, says that I'm giving my Nechosim to somebody else, does that include a Sefer Torah? We can't be sure about that, and therefore I'm Moitzim Chaver Elavarayim.
The Shikayah.